Makeshift Stories is now available on Stitcher Radio on demand. Download the free mobile app today and listen to us anywhere, anytime. There's no more syncing, no downloading, and no wasted memory.
Makeshift Stories presents Somewhere, Sometime, an irregular series of short sci-fi and fantasy stories.
A news story, a history book, a presentation and an ad can all have the same thing in common. By being selectively silent on certain key facts, they might present the truth as something that turns out to be not exactly as advertised. In this month's story, two friends, desperate to better their lot in life, immigrate to a new colony planet, only to realize that nothing has really changed. We now invite you to sit back and relax as you listen to Makeshift Story 65, The Wondering City. Somewhere in some time, you might take what appears to be two steps forward, only to discover that you've been tricked into taking three steps back. Verana's wristband flashed and vibrated, then the words, in large flashing letters, "You must return now," scrolled across the thin, flexible display. It was the first boarding call, and she knew that she could only wait another 10 minutes for Tara, or she'd miss the flight and find herself stranded. Butterflies began to tickle the inside of Verana's stomach. She hadn't felt so helpless since she had been lost in the streets at age 7. Unsure whether she should stay where she was or go look for her parents. Now, like then, her mind spun in a whirlwind of thoughts, which fragmented her memory of the day past. She was sitting at a table in a small roadside cafe, just outside the gates of the walled city, trying to decide what to do. The wall's strangely curved, polished sides now failed to hide their true nature from her. The walls were all too solid, Verana mused, to ever have been hidden or moved. But move, the historians had claimed they had once routinely done. Like some giant interplanetary yurt, the massive walls were said to have had the ability to be rolled up and transported light years away. The official records stated that the builders of this place, the Ilian, a nomadic culture once possessing advanced technology, had for over a millennium roamed this area of space, subjugating other races. All the history texts Verana had ever read described in great detail how humans doggedly pursued the Ilian until their mythical capital, the Wandering City, had been discovered, the Ilian contained, and their subjects freed from their domination. Verana wondered why, in all the years growing up, fascinated by the story of the Ilian, she had never suspected the real truth. She anxiously watched as streams of fellow tourists hurried by, headed to the spaceport. Blind to the reality she now saw in every detail. Verana suddenly found herself envying them. They all knew with a certainty that now eluded her where their next destination was.
"Verana,"
Tara prodded.
"Wake up. We're in orbit."
Verana reluctantly moved on the tiny bunk. They had been out late the night before with the other contest winners. Everyone else on board treated them like lepers, shunned, because without winning the contest, people like them barely had the money to buy a plastic model of the Cygnus Explorer, let alone pay for a 7-planet cruise on it. Being careful not to hit her head on the curve of the ceramic metallic wall, Verana reluctantly swung her legs off the bunk. Their cabin, like all the other winners, turned out to be the cheapest on board. Tucked away into the awkward corners of the ship, places the paying customers would never accept. Tara had felt deceived and angry once they had discovered where their cabin was.
"Figures,"
she sarcastically spat out when they had finally found their room located near the engines.
"Even here they try to keep the imported help in their place. Verana, we never get a break, even when we win,"
Tara complained. But as the Starliner had drawn close to their first stop, excitement had replaced her anger.
"Come on, hurry, Verana," Tara impatiently urged. "I want to be at the front of the line for the shuttle, so I can thumb my nose at all those first-class snobs."
Verana rushed to get ready, choosing clothes for warm weather. The famous Wandering City, the first stop on the trip, was located in the tropical zone of Kepler-89e. For Verana, this was a highlight of the cruise, the reason she wanted to come after Tara had told her that she'd won a trip for two. By the time Verana had finished her engineering degree, the world had become a crowded place with little opportunity for its 12 billion souls. With the help of a family friend, she had finally secured a dead-end job, working as a surveyor in a small New Delhi construction company. But Verana had yearned for more and started going to presentations on off-world colonies. At a recruitment fair for Gliese 581D, or the Garden World, as the presenters called it, Verana met Tara, a computer scientist, who, like herself, was trapped in a low-paying job with no opportunity to advance. They both quickly came to believe that their only hope was to leave Earth. Drawn by the hollows of pristine landscapes and testimonials from wealthy, successful recent arrivals, together they decided to immigrate to the Garden World. Their applications were accepted, but even with subsidized rates, it took all their savings to pay for the one-way trip. The planet truly deserved its name. It was a lush, benign paradise that almost brought tears to Verana's eyes when they first stepped out of the shuttle. But life there, if you did not arrive with a large bank balance, quickly proved to be more difficult than in New Delhi. Everyone had failed to tell them that local regulations required all new immigrant professionals to requalify for their accreditation through an obscenely expensive process. With almost no money left, Tara and Verana had been forced to take jobs cleaning the homes of those successful immigrants they had seen in the promotions. They found themselves working double shifts just to pay the rent and put food on the table. In truth, they were trapped. They had no money to return home or money to regain their professional status. Desperate for a way out, Tara had spent what little extra she had on lotteries. Verana thought it was foolish, but realized that it gave Tara some hope. Then, Tara had won the non-transferable trip for two, a cruise to seven exotic planets. It was a great boost to their spirits, and they felt that their luck might finally be changing. But just as they were boarding the shuttle that would take them to the orbiting Starliner, Tara received a message from her employer telling her that she'd been fired. They claimed that they couldn't find a temporary replacement, and besides, the new person was willing to work for less. So when they had at last found their tiny cabin, Tara's mood only darkened. Verana and Tara were the first to make it to the docking hatch and stood, waiting for the crew to complete the process, as a line of impatient, grumbling passengers accumulated behind them. They heard the muffled metallic clunks of clamps as a shuttle was locked into place. Then the air seals hissed open. Tara and Verana placed their hands on the scanner to let the ship know they were disembarking, then excitedly rushed through the hatch to take their seats. And 45 minutes later, they were standing on the shuttle gantry, smelling the odd, almost sweet air of the planet.
"Oh, wow."
Tara spun around to take in the view.
"I can't believe we're actually here. And I can't believe that they were ever able to move that."
Verana gasped, holding up a hand to shade her eyes, squinting, then pointing toward the city. The glassy walls of the fabled wandering city reflected the morning light, almost as if they were covered in mirrors.
"Let's get going. I want to stay ahead of the crowd."
Tara pointed to a steady stream of temporary invaders now pouring from the shuttle behind them. They quickly passed through the port's customs, then walked into the ancient walled city. Narrow streets fanned out in all directions, already crowded with shop owners hurrying to open their stalls before the onslaught. Verana looked around, disappointment spreading across her face.
"Looks like any other tourist trap," she dejectedly commented.
And she was right. They were standing on the edge of a forest of signs with familiar brand names that receded off into the distance as far as they could see. What remained of the original structures over the years had been barnacled over by human alterations.
"Verana, let's get off the main street,"
Tara suggested, pointing to a narrow alley with noticeably thinner commercial signage. They followed the twisting, deserted lane until it came to a small square where the buildings looked like they'd been scraped clean of human add-ons, their organic shape and reflective luster poking through in the cleaner spots, casting pools of light into the square.
I wonder where the alien are. We haven't seen any.
Verana noted. Distractedly surveying the square, Tara ignored Verana's comment.
Hey look, there's a local cafe over there. Maybe they'll have something we can actually afford. Let's check it out.
Tara grabbed Verana's arm and dragged her to one side of the square, where a few distinctly human-sized chairs and tables had been haphazardly interspersed with smaller benches. Tara and Verana sat down at a table bathed in one of the pools of reflected light. Almost immediately, a small man with unusually short legs wearing a threadbare apron appeared from one of the irregular cave-like holes tucked away into the shadows under a bulge in the wall. He was wiping his dough-covered hands on a towel that he hastily tucked into one pocket as he limped toward them. His leathery sun-baked skin made the man look centuries old.
Must be both the cook and the waiter.
Tara leaned over and whispered. Morning. The man greeted in a friendly tone as he handed Verana and Tara a handwritten menu on an ancient chalk slate.
Sorry, we don't usually get tourists here, so the menu may not be to your liking. You might want to go back to the main street and get something there.
He politely suggested, nodding back in the direction they had come from. Verana scrutinized the menu.
No, this is perfect. We came here to get away from all that. Anyway, I doubt if we could afford the prices on this trip.
She shyly added.
You're not tourists then?
The man questioned.
I never thought of us in that way. But yes, I guess we are. I've always wanted to come here. I've been fascinated by the alien ever since I was a little girl.
The old waiter appeared to relax.
Well then, I guess you're in the right place. May I suggest a local favorite for breakfast?
Verana and Tara happily agreed, and the man hurried off, then returned with two steaming cups.
An indigenous tea to start this wonderful morning. The alien swear it has some unique characteristics. Helps to open your mind to the new day and the new possibilities it brings. The new day is very central to Ilian culture. They believe that each time the light is renewed, there is new potential, and one must be open to it.
I hadn't heard that before,
Verana admitted, cautiously sipping the tea.
This is quite good.
The old man smiled again.
My name is Surat. Welcome to Mauritia.
Tara and Verana gave Surat a perplexed look.
It's the alien name for this world, he explained, then casually remarked. You're not like the usual tourists.
No,
Tara tersely replied.
We're not. The cost of a trip like this is more than we could earn in 10 years. I won a contest, otherwise we wouldn't be here. The other passengers know what we are and tried to avoid us. I'm sure that they only see us as low-paid domestics, who unfortunately for them got lucky. They don't care that back home we would have been equals. It really just comes down to money for a piece of paper. That's all that separates us. But they don't want to acknowledge that. We were naive fools to have believed their promises.
Tara angrily added.
Surat sat back in his chair and sighed. A sad story. I'm truly sorry. Perhaps I can take your minds away from your problems. I have something that I'd like to share with both of you. But first I must prepare your food, then we will talk some more.
Surat abruptly turned and hobbled back into the dark recesses of the building. After he had gone, Tara and Verana experimentally sampled their tea. The meal was simple but delicious, made up of surprisingly artfully arranged colorful indigenous fruits that neither friend recognized. Surat left them alone until they were finished eating and were relaxing, watching the orange alien sun lazily climb into the cloudless azure sky. He cleared the table, then came back and pulled up another chair, sat down, and silently waited. Finally, Verana asked,
I'm curious, Surat. Where are the alien? We've only seen humans so far.
Well, my new friends, you've noticed something that most passing through tend not to see.
Surat appeared to be carefully assessing their reactions.
The only ones you'll find here work at the so-called historic sites as a kind of living exhibit. They detest this place and live elsewhere in the reserved lands.
Why?
Tara politely inquired.
This is not their city. It's for you and your kind.
What do you mean?
Tara questioned.
This is the Wandering City, isn't it?
Are you willing to open your minds to new possibilities? Tara and Verana cautiously nodded. Okay then, we must take a small trip. Verana looked at her ship's wristband and began to protest.
But we only have a few hours.
Don't worry, I will have you back in time to board your shuttle. No one who has ever taken up my offer has been disappointed. In less than half an hour, Tara and Verana found themselves well outside the walls of the Wandering City, heading down a narrow twisting path through an alien jungle of purple and red leaf plants, which encroached back on the trail almost as soon as they had passed. The slightly thinner air and heavier gravity worked for Surratt and against Tara and Verana, so despite his short legs, Surratt proved to be very agile, forcing Tara and Verana into a jog to keep up. Finally, Surratt stopped for a rest. Between gasps, Verana asked,
Where are we going?
To the place the Ilian live. It's very close, just over that ridge. Few tourists ever get to see it, so you are extremely lucky.
Why us, then?
Verana suspiciously asked. Surratt got back to his feet and slowly stretched. Because you have the ability to understand, my friends. Come, you have much to see and learn, and little time to do it in. He turned and hurried off down the path. They trekked up a ridge that was significantly steeper than it looked, which made it difficult for Verana and Tar to keep Surratt in sight. The lush green vegetation soon gave way to scrubbier plants, allowing them to see more of the land as they ascended. In a small clearing near the top of the ridge, Tara and Verana stopped to catch their breath and looked around. Behind them, a sea of dense jungle swayed lazily in the light breeze, the walls of the Wandering City defiantly jutting up like an artificial island that some giant had haphazardly dropped from the sky.
It doesn't really look like it belongs here, does it?
Tara said between deep pants.
No. But then, they moved it so many times, that kind of makes sense.
Verana reflected, thinking of the history texts she had read as a young girl.
You're almost there. You can rest on the other side.
The distant voice of Surratt encouraged from the top of the ridge. Wearily, they turned and resumed their now arduous climb. When they finally summited, the scene before them seemed incongruous to the landscape they had just left behind. In front lay a tortured, rust and gray-colored landscape that appeared to have been ravaged by fire, melted, then ripped apart. Impact craters randomly broke up a haphazard pattern of scattered debris that extended off to the horizon. Tar and Verana stood, frozen, dumbfounded by the utter magnitude of the destruction.
It can be quite overwhelming when you first see it. At least that's what I've been told by the special few outsiders who have witnessed this. But we must hurry, your time is limited.
Now somehow looking more alien than human, Surratt quietly slipped up beside them and placed a long, slender hand on each of their shoulders.
The true home of the Ilian, do you see it?
He pointed a slender finger down into the valley that flowed out beneath them. Almost bending into the rubble stood a cluster of flimsy-looking modest buildings that defied the ruined landscape by simply existing. If Surratt hadn't pointed it out, the settlement could have easily been overlooked.
The real Wandering City, Surratt added.
Then, before Tara and Verana could say anything, he started off down a well-worn trail that snaked between the broken rocks. Confused, they rushed to catch up to the suddenly graceful Surratt, who literally flowed like a dancer down the back of the ridge.
This is almost like the surface of Mercury,
Verana called to Tara. Surratt, now several meters in front, crooked his head to listen, then stopped.
But unlike a natural planetary process, this world was transformed in just 2 days.
How?
Surprised, Verana asked.
I believe your people call it the liberation of Cygnus.
The words made Verana's heart almost stop.
But that was when the Wandering City was discovered and the Ilian agreed to remain in one place. It was the critical event that opened this area to humans,
Verana explained.
The Ilian, they were like the Mongols in the 13th century on Earth. They once controlled a vast number of planetary systems in this sector.
Suddenly, Surratt appeared to grow impatient.
I always hear this fairy tale. You need to leave it behind you, like that abomination they call a city on the other side of the hill.
Feeling admonished, Verana shut up and fell silently in behind Tara. Surratt led them down slope through a bombed-out Terra Incognita. Immense boulders lay cracked open, their new sides peppered with smaller impacts. Here and there, plants were struggling to survive in an obviously toxic soil. Taking in the landscape, Verana began to look distressed.
In school, they said that there wasn't much of a battle. The Ilian were supposed to have just given up.
She commented in surprise. Over his shoulder, Surratt cynically called back.
We did, but they chose to negotiate the terms through bombs.
They soon reached the valley bottom, then turned to avoid a particularly large pile of rubble. As they rounded its corner, the Ilian village came into view. Tara stopped in her tracks and gawked.
It's a lot bigger than I had imagined.
The entire valley bottom appeared to contain fragile-looking mushroom-colored tents, which sprouted up between the boulders like weeds.
How long has it been here?
She asked in a hushed tone.
A lot longer than your kind believes.
Surratt whispered under his breath.
And the survivors built this tent city after?
Verana ventured.
No, this has always been here. The Wandering City, I mean. No doubt you were expecting great walls like the theme park you landed at. In a sense, we have always been a nomadic people, so we have no need for great hulking structures to mark our accomplishments.
Come, my home is near. I will explain there. Surratt moved quickly off down a trail that led into the village. The Wandering City appeared to have simply sprouted out of the ground from seeds blown on the wind. Its layout had no apparent logic, and all the buildings, if that's what you could call them, were more like makeshift structures made out of some material that neither Verana or Tara recognized. They passed by many Ilian who, like Surratt, except for their short legs, were human enough so that from a distance it would be hard to tell the two apart. But they were a people of such sparse means that it was hard for Verana and Tara to picture how they could even move over the hill, let alone control an interplanetary empire. Their clothes were simple, rough, handmade garments. There were no vehicles or any other evidence of higher technology. The Ilian, for all intents and purposes, appeared to be a pre-industrial nomadic culture. Surratt stopped in front of one of the many nondescript yurts and beckoned for Verana and Tara to enter. Verana anxiously checked her wristband, noting the time they had left before ducking through the flap that Surratt held open for them. The interior was unexpectedly pristine. Soft white light appeared to emanate from the walls and roof, lending everything in the sparse but comfortable interior a ghostly white glow. Surratt closed the flap, then motioned for them to sit on the low bench that hugged one wall. Then Surratt sank down, cross-legged, on the floor in front of them and warmly smiled.
Welcome to my home. I know that you have many questions. Let me answer the most common ones first. We have lived like this for thousands of generations. The city you saw when you landed was something we agreed to build as part of our treaty with your kind. We did it to help them continue the fiction they needed to tell you. Look at it this way. When they came, they expected to find something that made sense in your terms. Great fleets of battlecruisers, planetary defense systems, and immense wealthy cities, I suppose. But when they only found this, Surratt waved an agitated arm around the yurt. They insisted that we were deceiving them. It didn't fit the narrative they had constructed in their minds. Only when they had run out of bombs did they admit that there was nothing here for them to fear and defeat. Then we talked for the first time, and we agreed to build the city they had dreamed about and create the jungles around it if they would leave us alone, which is all that we had wanted from the beginning, to be left alone. But it came at a great cost. We lost so many. Enough of the past now. Let me share something with you that will help you understand. The walls of the yurt faded away. Tara and Verana found themselves sitting in a park in New Delhi. Startled, they both tried to talk at once.
But how?
We never had ships to travel between the stars. I opened your minds to the potential of this place, and in turn, it helped you realize a common desire. That is our secret. That is why we have sacrificed so much to stay.
It's not a technology in the way your people would understand. It's a relationship that exists as long as we accept it. To try and understand would destroy its power. But if you're open to its possibilities, anywhere you can imagine is within reach. Not physically, you must understand. We can touch the minds of others who are also receptive. And that's all.
That's why we couldn't find you, but saw your influence everywhere.
Tara excitedly broke in. Yes. Surratt thoughtfully nodded. I am sad to say this, but what has happened between our cultures comes down to fear. We feared the loss of our spirit if our connection to this place was disturbed. You feared us, because you could only understand us in terms of your own motivations. In the end, a huge loss for both of us. Tara looked into Surratt's eyes, breaking her connection to whatever it was that had created the vision of Earth, and the scene melted back into the fabric walls.
And so, if I chose to stay,
she began. Surratt completed her sentence. You would have to open your mind to the possibilities of this place. It's a great privilege, but you are welcome to live here and explore the universe with us. Verena's wristband insistently buzzed, sending small shocks across her skin. Tara wasn't coming. That much was obvious now. Verena regretted the argument they had had just before she left. Tara's logic had been flawless. At the end of the trip, they would return to their cleaning jobs, only to be trapped in a situation with little hope of change. In her heart, Verena knew that Tara was right, but had lacked the courage to choose such an intangible path. The wristband impatiently sent stronger shocks through her body, demanding that she pay attention. She paid the bill and got up, watched the last few stragglers, a wealthy family laden with shopping bags, rush through the city gate toward the spaceport. Verena finally decided. She unbuckled her wristband and let it drop to the ground. Thanks for listening to Makeshift Stories 65, Somewhere, Sometime, The Wondering City. We hope that you enjoyed this month's story. As always, if you like what we're doing, please tell your friends about us or write a review on iTunes. We love hearing your comments, so send us an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. The opening and closing theme is Pod Safe Music by David H. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, No Derivative License, which means that you're free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.